This meeting of House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 10 o'clock on Tuesday, April 10th. Members present are Representative Newman, Representative Chenault, and that's all I see, myself, Chair Stutes. We do not have a quorum, but we are going to go forward with our public or our invited testimony today. We are allowing the use of electronic devices during committee, but I ask you kindly to silence your phones. We are asking that the staff and members of the audience not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to a committee member, if you'd get a hold of my committee aide, Matt Greening, he'd be happy to help you out. I'd like to thank Brian Glynn of the Fisheries Committee, the Fisheries Committee Secretary, and Doug Bridges from Juno LIO for tech teleconferencing support. Today we're hearing invited testimony on House Bill 199. Just a heads up for the public, we will be we will be finished here by 10:40, being that we have a 10:50 session, joint session with the House and the Senate to confirm the governor's appointees on various boards and commissions. This session will last, we're guessing, somewhere around 3 hours, and then we will try and reconvene after session, but we will keep our members informed by email. I'm asking that testifiers combine their remarks to somewhere between 3 and 7 minutes. That's a pretty wide range there. And I would ask that you kindly speak to the bill and keep your bills or your remarks and your statements to the bill, not the initiative. And members, if you'd wait until the end of the testimony of the individual for questions. With that, we will start with our public testimony, and we are going to start with John DeHamel. He's from the Alaska Power Association. If you could state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Do you hear me okay?
We can hear you just great.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate the time to talk to you today, Madam Chair, and other committee members. My name is John DeHamel. I'm a director on the board of the Alaska Power Association. I'm also the chair to our hydropower group. That group represents most of the hydropower projects in Alaska. I'm also the Copper Valley Electric CEO. And one last resume item. I have recently gone through the licensing process to license a hydropower project in Alaska, that project being an Allison Creek hydroelectric project in Valdez.
Are you on a speakerphone?
I am.
Could you please? I think it would enable us to hear you a little more clearly.
Can you hear me better now?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So my comments today, I'd like to start by saying that I believe that the bill has some very admirable goals. And we certainly at Alaska Power Association, you know, understand those goals and the reasons for the bill. However, our concern is for what we call unintended consequences. And the unintended consequences are what we believe going to be very detrimental to hydropower and hydropower licensing and relicensing. There's several small issues with the bill, which I really don't want to cover in the name of time today, but I do want to cover three main points about the bill and provide the committee with information on these three points. So the first point is, if that bill were in place when Copper Valley Electric built the Solomon Gulch hydro plant, the project would have never moved forward. The bill requires a fishway passage requirement, and when we built our project several years ago, we actually stopped any salmon fishways in a very small inlet for the sake of building this hydroelectric project. But I will say that that population of salmon was quite small, and this was back in the late 70s. About 300, they were estimating about 300 salmon would be impacted by the project. However, what we got out of the project was a steady flow of water year-round, which then allowed Valdez to build a hatchery. That hatchery today now provides 300 million salmon to the area. So we sacrificed 300 salmon to produce a project that allows 300 million salmon. So the bill would not have allowed that project to move forward with this requirement for a fishway passage. That was point one. So the mitigation part of this, and I know there is mitigation allowance in the bill, however, there seems to be a conflict between the fishway requirement and the mitigation part of this. My second point is that these processes are already in place. I just went through, as I said, a licensing process for Allison Creek Hydroelectric Project. This is a very small 6.5 megawatt project, and all the requirements of anadromous protections were already in the process. In fact, the process is so laborious at times, it took Copper Valley Electric 5 years to get a license to build this project. And that came in with a price tag of about $7 million. If we implement this bill, you're going to add a tremendous amount of additional time to the licensing process, and you're going to add a significant amount of cost to the licensing process because now you've built another layer of requirements into a process that's already there. The third point that I'd like to make is that this project actually almost opposes Senator Murkowski's effort. Senator Murkowski has introduced an energy bill, and in that energy bill, one part of that energy bill is to streamline hydro licensing. And that streamlining actually requires consolidation of those reviewing the license request. It requires reducing layers to the license request. And, of course, he wants to speed up the timeline. HB 199 does the opposite of that. It adds layers to the licensing process, and it does not consolidate reviewers. It actually expands the number of reviewers to the project. So, in conclusion, Alaska Power Association and their members appreciate this bill. We appreciate the goals of the bill, but we are concerned with the unintended consequences that come from it.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Next, we will go to Robin Samuelson in Dillingham. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm representing myself. Thank you, madam Chair, for holding this meeting today on fisheries, and thank the committee for taking the time to sit around the table on this fine day. I'm born and raised in Dillingham, Alaska. I've been commercial fishing for 50 years. Now my job is to train my grandsons and to reap the benefit of our Alaska salmon industry. I want to go back, Madam Chair, why did we become a state? We became a state because we wanted to outlaw fish traps. Fish traps were devastating our communities. They were killing off runs that were thriving. We voted and became a state. The next big hurdle that we faced in our salmon resources was a high seas drift net. And after we got done bombing Japan in World War II, we decided to create an economic base and allowed them to come over here with their high seas drift nets, miles and miles of net, and they devastated the runs in Bristol Bay. I remember when I was a kid there was very little salmon in Bristol Bay. Things were shut down, finally we mounted a big campaign at the United Nations led by none other than Senator Lyman Hoffman, who brought us back to the United Nations, and we provided testimony that banned the high seas drift net fishing. We have a 60-year-old law. Things have changed drastically in the last 60 years. We need an update, and I want to thank the committee for looking at ways and means to protect the salmon habitat. House Bill 199 doesn't go as far as I'd like to see it go, but it's a start in the right process. We need to do something. Oil is not going to last the state of Alaska into the future like salmon has. Our salmon runs. My grandfather was one of the major investors in the first cannery in Bristol Bay, John W. Clark, who Lake Clark's named after. My family's been involved in this fishery from day one. We need to keep this run strong and healthy, and the only way you could do it is provide protection for the salmon as they enter. You look at Lower 48 and what they've done to their salmon runs and decimated those salmon runs within the industry. I'm not against mining. I'm not against pro-development. But we need to take steps to make sure that those companies that are coming here to Alaska to develop our resources do it in a sound manner that's not going to have negative effect on our salmon stocks, our communities, and our people. So with that, Ms. Chairman, I want to thank you all again for taking this bill up. I hope that that in the near future that we could come up with a bill that will entice what we've done 60 years ago. You know, the Alaska Board of Fish has requested the additional authority, and I was on the Board of Fish. I represented the Board of Fish for 3 years. I was on the North Pacific Council for 9 years. And it's pretty hard being on them boards and councils when you see problems that you know that need fixing, but you can't fix because of the law. And, you know, the request came from the Board of Fish, and that's what started this whole process. People are blowing it out of proportion, Madam Chair. This isn't just about the Pebble Mine. It's about all Alaska. Whether you live in Ketchikan, whether you live in Bethel or the Yukon River, we need to protect our fish habitat. Our people depend upon the fish. You take the fish out of the people's diet, you're going to kill off the population of rural Alaska. Rural Alaskans depend on this resource for sustenance. It's tied to their culture, and we need to protect these runs. And I'm not saying shut down the industries, but the industry, like in California, they've got controls on gasoline in California for cleaner air. We need to make it a priority that we're going to protect our fish habitat and still allow good, responsible development within the regions. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Mike Satry here. Mike, if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chair Stutes, members of the Fisheries Committee. My name is Michael Satry. I was born and raised in Southeast Alaska, and Juneau is my home. I have over 20 years of technical and management experience in the mining industry, and I'm currently the Government and Community Relations Manager for the Hecla Greens Creek Mine here in Juneau. But today, I am representing the Council of Alaska Producers, as I'm a board member and immediate past president. The Council is a nonprofit trade association formed in 1992 and serves as a spokesperson for the large metal mines and major metal developmental projects in the state. We bring together mining companies with interest in Alaska and represent and inform members of the our members on legislative and regulatory issues, support and advance the mining industry, educate members of the media and the general public on mining-related issues, and promote economic opportunity and environmentally sound mining practices. So on April 10th of 2017, the Council sent a letter to this committee opposing House Bill 199 because it was the wrong solution to a problem that doesn't exist. Exactly 1 year later, we are here today to maintain this is still the case. Alaska has a world-class permitting system that balances our economy and the environment through the consistent application of a rigorous science-based process. Our system works and is a proven model for managing the complex and constantly evolving science behind habitat management. When our state system is coupled with the federal protections contained within the National Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, and ANILCA, anadromous fish habitat in Alaska has protections that are the envy of the world. With these protections in place, there is absolutely no need to introduce the complex regulatory scheme contained within the current committee substitute for House Bill 199. But that being said, we would like to recognize Chair Stutes and her staff for responding to the concerns of the mining industry in this CS. Without question, the previous versions of House Bill 199 would have resulted in a complete shutdown of mining in Alaska. Representative Stutes and Mr. Greening should be thanked for taking the time to learn how mines are permitted and operated, as well as recognizing the importance of mines and miners to our state. Their consideration of our concerns and revising the bill in response is part of the normal legislative process, and we commend their efforts. However, after a detailed review of the new bill, we still have significant concerns, including the designation of intermittent waters as anadromous fish habitat, the lack of a clear definition of wetlands in designating anadromous fish habitat, the concept of a fish habitat permit assessment that unnecessarily duplicates a federal environmental impact statement, the lack of clarity on the use of mitigation for large permanent structures that impact anadromous fish habitat, and there are also multiple opportunities to litigate a single permit in the CS. We would also note that while we do not object to the concept of public notification in the fish habitat permit process, it appears that the current scheme of comment, decisions, and reconsiderations could result in significant project delays. A public notification process should allow sufficient time to address stakeholder concerns that are made in good faith, while still providing the project proponent a transparent and predictable pathway to a permit. There is no question that salmon and salmon habitat have cultural, emotional, and economic significance in Alaska like few other places. But it is not by magic or by accident that Alaska has sustainably managed its fisheries since statehood. Our science-based process, built on a foundation of objective evidence and data, has proven itself year after year. While every process may need some tweaks from time to time, there is no proven need for the introduction of a burdensome and complex bureaucracy that discourages investment in our state. If specific, targeted improvements to Title 16 are shown to be needed, such as the addition of public notification, we look forward to participating in that conversation. The Council of Alaska Producers respectfully maintains that House Bill 199 cannot be fixed and opposes moving this bill from committee. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Oh, Representative Tarr, and I did not notice she came in about 10 minutes ago, so Representative Tarr has been here, and Representative Christ Hopkins snuck in too, and I didn't see him. But there is a question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, you know, I know from, for example, when Greens Creek was wanting to do the expansion of the tailings site, that, you know, required significant public process and that there were some concerns that that process allowed to, it seemed like, be addressed, and there was maybe not satisfactory resolution for everyone, but that having that public engagement, it seemed like, was pretty positive for that. And I guess when I look at what's being suggested here, it seems like this public process will provide an opportunity for earlier discussion of issues, earlier in the process before any permits are allowed, and that could have the effect of limiting any litigation that might come later, And so I'm just trying to understand, you know, from your perspective in terms of public process, could that be beneficial to kind of make sure that everybody's at the table earlier in the process and having concerns addressed? That way you're not, you know, because what people I think really complain about is that they feel like they learn about something when it's, they almost feel like it's a done deal, you know, and that the public process part of it, you know, comes so late, or then they find out about it so late that they don't have a way to meaningfully participate or have influence. And so I like the way this has the potential to make that happen earlier. And I just wonder if you could comment on that.
So through the chair, Representative Tarr, you know, thank you for bringing up our Greens Creek example. I think that Greens Creek EIS is an example of where public notification and comment worked. Because remember, the environmental impact statement process does not issue a permit. It simply decides what is the best alternative to move forward, whether it meets the public need and also minimizes impacts to the environment. So we did not get what we wanted in that environmental impact statement. The stakeholder concerns were heard in the EIS. We were only allowed to go forward and permit a very limited footprint at Greens Creek. And the permits that we were able to apply for and get reflected that. So that's a great example, I think, of how the existing process works to minimize impacts to anadromous fish habitat, which was the key concern in that EIS.
Follow up.
And Madam Chair, I think in this circumstance, as I understand it, these would be the projects that we wouldn't be really having an EIS, because that would only be triggered where there's federal participation, right? So this would be, you know, the permits that are required by the state that might otherwise be outside of that EIS process. And so I guess I'm using that as sort of an analogy of why I think that might be good to have the public involved in a way that seems similar to that. And so I just wonder if you have some comment on that. And just, I think, again, the earlier in the process that you can resolve problems, because, if something is litigated, that can be a lengthy process. And then that there is a lot of uncertainty at that point about what comes next.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I appreciate the conversation here. I think our concern with House Bill 199 is that it reaches state oversight into areas that are already covered through 404 permits that would generate an EIS process, and may potentially even go far beyond that. But there's multiple permits for a project. There's multiple analyses. Our Fish and Game, DNR, and DEC either have a veto authority at a certain point in time or are at the table for those permits, and we believe that system works. And we're, you know, look forward to having that conversation as we look at Title 16 improvements in the future.
And along those lines, so in the Title 16 permit process, though, I don't believe there is any public comment provision. Don't you think that that's something that would be valuable to the public, to have some public comment during that process?
Thank you, Chair Stutes. The letter from the Board of Fish certainly asked for public notification, and you know, in our testimony from the Council of Alaska Producers, we think that's one of those tweaks that could improve Title 16, and we look forward to, you know, some targeted language that allows for public notification of fish habitat permits.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll go to Will Mayo in Fairbanks. Will, if you could state your name and affiliation, please, and then begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Stutes, and committee. My name is Will Mayo. My DNR name is Sanklitop.
Excuse me. Are you on a speakerphone?
Negative. I'm speaking on my cell phone.
Okay. All right. We're just having a little difficulty hearing you, so make sure you hold it close to yourself there when you're speaking, please.
Okay. I'll also lift my voice a little bit.
Thank you.
And I hope that improves it.
Yes, it did.
Okay, great. So, again, my name is Will Mayo. I am representing the Tanana Chiefs Conference today. I myself am a tribal member of the Native Village of Tanana, on the Yukon River, community heavily dependent on our salmon stocks. And I'm currently the executive director for tribal government and client services. The Tanana Chiefs was organized to advocate for our tribes. Our native name for our organization, the Nahanash, it means our land speaks. And this indicates the importance of these resources that derive from our lands. We are a consortium of 42 tribal communities. 37 of them are recognized in the United States by the United States Constitution as expressed through federal processes. And we are in the interior of Alaska. We serve about 14,000 Native people, Alaska Natives in the interior, within our traditional ancestral lands. It covers an area about 235,000 square miles in interior Alaska, with 39 villages. So we're charged with advancing tribal self-determination and enhancing Native regional unity. Our mission is to provide a unified voice in advancing sovereign tribal governments through the promotion of physical and mental wellness, education, social, economic development, culture, and culture of the interior Alaska Native people. Currently, the Tanana Chiefs Conference, 42 voting members of the full board of directors, has two standing resolutions that they passed that direct our advocacy on this specific subject. Both resolutions support a rewrite to Title 16 that allows for more protection of our food resources, and that is what HB 199 does. So it creates the two tiers permitting system. Currently, all projects, big and small, are under the same permit type. HB 199 breaks down projects to two major categories: activities that would adversely affect anadromous fish and fish habitat, and minor projects, activities that would not adversely affect anadromous fish and fish habitat. It creates specific language for consideration of effects on of activity on anadromous fish and fish habitat. Under HB 199, a project that has the potential to adversely affect these resources would meet a number of specific criteria. These clear criteria are a good departure from the current version of Title 16, which is vague and open to interpretation. So HB 199 creates a public process. It creates public notice for all permits, major and minor. There is a 30-day comment period for all major projects on a draft fish habitat permit assessment. Additionally, the commissioner must provide his or her determination in writing and make available for public comment. The public may also submit a timely request for reconsideration if they disagree with the commissioner's determination. So this brings me to some specific concerns TCC does have with the new version. The amended version deleted the phrase adjacent riparian areas. TCC supports inclusion of adjacent riparian areas in this section with language that would acknowledge authority, that could acknowledge authority of or coordination with the DNR for defining riparian habitat. Exclusion of riparian areas leaves a critical area of the watershed potentially unprotected. This language would help reduce the risk of erosion and sedimentation, which otherwise would smother and suffocate salmon eggs and cause waterways to warm, reduce visibility for rearing salmon to find food. The amended version also has removed the phrase presumption of anadromy. TCC supports including presumption of anadromy for all waterways below a certain elevation to be determined by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Fisheries biologists. Would be ideal if supported by peer-reviewed scientific literature, so that all waterways that may have salmon will receive proper protections. And then, lastly, the amended version of HB 199 has significantly weakened language for mitigation. TCC supports the original language regarding mitigation measures in statute, but for the following areas and regions only, leaving the rest of the state exempt. One, special areas or fishery reserves, such as Bristol Bay. Two, regions primarily dependent on and are supportive of traditional subsistence fishing.
Mr. Mayo, I'm going to have to ask you to sum up your testimony, if you would, please.
I was just saying that concludes my testimony.
Oh, sure. Perfect timing.
Okay.
Thank you, and thank you very much for your testimony.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
And I think we can get one more in before we take our break, and that will be Kara Moriarty and Josh Kindred. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record and then begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
And my name is Joshua Kindred. I'm Environmental Counsel for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
So, Madam Chair, I'm just going to make a brief comment, and then I'm going to turn it over to our Environmental Council to walk through the challenges that we see with your legislation. First of all, we thank you for the opportunity to provide some more detailed invited testimony on this piece of legislation. We're happy to continue to work with you and your staff as this bill or other versions move through the process, either this session or in future sessions. We appreciate that you've recognized some concerns, but as with the mining industry, we have some additional concerns with the bill that I'll have Josh work through from a legal perspective. So with that, thank you, and I'll turn it over to Josh.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee. So just for a little bit of context, a large part of what I do for AOGA is to review regulatory packages, and through the lens of legality, but primarily to see that the effects of the oil and gas industry are narrowly tailored to a legitimate sort of environmental aim. And so through that lens, I analyze HB 199, and, you know, in broad fundamental terms, this is going to result in negative externalities for the state, substantial negative externalities for the state, whether through the public sector or the private sector, at a time when the state is facing fiscal crunch and when the economy can best be described as stagnant. That's a heavy cost to pay, but when you evaluate it towards the benefits, that's where I think you see some of the fundamental flaws with HB 199. And the fact of the matter is, it's all based on this assumption or this implication that salmon are not currently protected in Alaska. And as some of the previous testifiers have indicated, nothing could be further from the truth. And so, I guess to put it colloquially, part of the problem is that this seems to be a solution in search of a problem. And if it was just nominal or academic, I guess I wouldn't have an issue with it. But the fact that it is actually going to result in harm to the state, I guess, causes someone to consider whether or not it's prudent to move forward. Now, I recognize I have a fairly limited time, and I'd like to get into some of the more specific provisions. As one of the previous testifiers indicated, the language adjacent riparian areas in Section 4, page 3, was replaced with wetlands. And as I read that, I wasn't really sure what the catalyst for that modification was. You know, wetlands comprise 175 million acres of Alaska, 43% of state surface area. And they're sufficiently protected through federal jurisdiction. And so I guess I struggle to understand why this dramatic expansion of in Edgemont's fish habitat into areas that I don't think have the scientific underpinnings to warrant that, but also for any operator that's ever had to navigate getting a 404B permit understands just how sufficiently and thoroughly wetlands protected in the state of Alaska. So I would suggest that maybe we reconsider whether or not that is an area that we want to go down. Also, when you get back into this distinction between major and minor permits, this most recent iteration of HB 199 removes the qualifier significant from adverse effects. And what that will effectively do is will make sure that any resource project will have to go through the major permit process. And that in and of itself is laborious and will result in delays, but it may not really be warranted given they may have just nominal adverse effects and that shouldn't rise to the level of major permits. And probably, as I look at the clock, one of the biggest issues I see in HB 199 as I go through it is that this is fodder for litigation. I recognize that that's not the intent of the HB 199, but I do think that is one of the unintended consequences. When I read through this, I identified four different opportunities for litigation for every single permit that goes forward. And if you think about a major resource development project, they may have dozens of permits. So when you start multiplying the opportunities for litigation, the first one would be once the commissioner makes a distinction between minor and major permit. That's an opportunity for litigation. Once they issue the draft assessment, that's an opportunity for litigation. The bond assessment is an opportunity for litigation. And the final permit assessment is another opportunity for litigation. And that's not just cost and delay and uncertainty on the projects. It's also cost to the state. And I think, and my candor is rarely tempered by diplomacy, I think it's important to recognize how regulations that are pure in endeavor can be manipulated to serve ideological ends. And so when I look at this, I look it through the prism of how can a special interest group use this to their own ends? And litigation is what we see more so than anything else in Alaska to stop development projects. And so I just hope that the body is cognizant of what this will opportunities it will afford them in the way in which it is drafted. We should be looking for ways to streamline resource management. And I see that my time's coming to an end. So I guess I'll say this. I didn't really know anything about anadromous fish habitat a year ago when HB 199 was first put forth. And I dug into this, and I saw that the public narrative was a story about how we as a state needed to strive to protect salmon. But the more I dug into this, the more I realized that that's actually not the story. The story is how sort of exemplary fish and game has been at protecting salmon since statehood. I've spoken on any number of panels and debated proponents of HB 199 or the Stand for Salmon Initiative, and I have yet to hear one example, even minor in scope, in which the current regulatory rubric failed to protect salmon. And so again, I encourage you to have caution in moving forward with regulations that are going to adversely affect the state that aren't necessary. But thank you for your time.
Thank you, and we appreciate you coming and testifying. And you had a minute left.
Oh, okay. I keep going.
Thank you. And in light of the time, we are going to take an at-ease. And it will be to the call of the chair, and we will notify you by email, so keep an eye on your emails as to when we will be back to continue our public testimony. With that, I will recess. House Fisheries is back on the record, and we are having invited testimony on House Bill 199, and we are going to start with Mr. Brown. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please, and then begin your testimony.
My name is William Brown. I go by Bill. And I'm affiliated with myself. I'm just an interested bystander. I'm William Brown, known as Bill, and I've lived in Juneau since 1992. I'm an avid fisherman. I was appointed to the Board of Fish by Governor Palin and reappointed by Governor Parnell. I am no longer on the Board of Fish. I hold a PhD in economics and taught full-time at the university level for 23 years. Among the courses I taught was resource and environmental economics, a course that contained a section on fisheries economics. When I left the university in the year 2000, I opened a fishing reel repair shop. It is the only shop in Southeast Alaska. I service more than 1,000 reels per year, and the best part about it, I get to talk fishing with my customers almost every day. But enough about me. I want to make two brief points in my support for House Bill 199. First, I'm sure that everyone in this room recognizes the importance of salmon for the people and economy of our state. Sadly, I suspect that everyone in this room also recognizes that many, if not most, of the salmon runs in our state are in trouble. This is especially true in Southeast Alaska, where the king salmon harvest has just been closed for this spring, like it was last spring, and like it probably will be next year. Concern for salmon isn't new. Indeed, we discuss it every year at every meeting I served on the Board of Fish, and it's a topic of most of the customers that come by my shop. The issue is that we can't be sure what's causing our problem with salmon. Several things have been suggested. High seas intercept by foreign fishermen, warming ocean temperatures, bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska, overharvest, damage to the rivers and spawning areas, and more. The Board of Fish and Department of Fish and Game have long been trying to help our salmon, but frankly, the results haven't been good. Both the numbers and size of salmon are shrinking. We need to do more. This is the aim of House Bill 199, to carefully monitor salmon rivers and spawning areas to make sure that economic development does not damage our salmon stocks. In its current incarnation, at least the bill I'm most familiar with, HB 199 represents a good start, but I'd like to see some minor changes to strengthen it. It's vital that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have the ability to protect riparian zones to create mandatory, enforceable standards for fish habitat protection. Also, we need stronger mitigation standards to allow AFDNG to rule against major projects like Pebble Mine that will cause substantial damage to salmon runs. And we need to give the department broader authority to protect fish habitat throughout the entire state. It's my understanding that currently the authority extends to barely half of the salmon streams in our state. But I'm a market economist. I don't like regulations. I believe that economic incentives should be left alone whenever possible, but I also believe that some regulations are probably necessary. The regulations embodied in HB 199, along with my suggestions, are necessary. They will do a small part to stave off the utter collapse of our salmon stocks. Will it solve the problem? Not completely, but it's one important step, and I'm sure it will help. My second main point relies upon economic analysis and a bit of mathematical reasoning. As I see it, the main arguments against HB 199 come from the mining industry. Now, I'm not opposed to mining and completely understand the need for copper, gold, silver, and the other metals that are mined in Alaska. I also know that mining generates considerable income and lots of jobs in our state, but so does fishing. When salmon stocks or even salmon forecasts are down, income declines ripple throughout the entire state. Believe me, traffic in my reel repair shop was down over 40% last year and looks to be as bad this year as well. Still, I doubt I'm being hurt as much as the trollers in Southeast or the small communities that rely exclusively on fishing. When we look at the cost, fewer mining jobs and mining income, versus the benefits, more salmon and salmon income from HB 199, we're making a mistake if we look at only the short run. The problem is dynamic and takes place over a long time. To me, the issue is this. In the best of conditions, a mine will be worked until it is exhausted and closed down. But our salmon will last forever if we manage them correctly. Forever. We can do that. Our grandchildren and their children deserve to grow up with Alaska wild salmon as integral a part of their identity as it is ours today. HB 199 is a small step towards that end. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will go to Dr. Schindler. Oh, he's not online? Oh, go left. All right. We'll go to Kim Rettmeyer. Okay. We didn't give him very much notice coming from session. So how about Brian Kraft? No. John McKinnon, I don't see. Emily Anderson, I see Emily.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Emily Anderson. I am the Alaska Director for the Wild Salmon Center. But perhaps more importantly for this topic today, I'm an attorney, and I've specialized in the areas of natural resource and water law for the last 14 years or so here in the state of Alaska. First, I'd like to thank Representative Stutes and the committee for taking on this really difficult task of tackling a very critical update to one of our most important laws, the Protect Fisheries. From my standpoint, I think this, and the standpoint of a lot of Alaskans, this task is very long overdue. The Anadromous Fish Act, is also known as the Fish Habitat Permitting Law, was originally passed shortly after statehood and really hasn't changed since then. But before we take a look to the future and really look and dive into HB 199, I think it's also important to remind ourselves of the past and where this law is rooted and where it comes from. The Alaska Constitution has three provisions that specifically address salmon and other renewable resources. Article 8 in particular of the Alaska Constitution reserves fish, wildlife, and water to the people of Alaska for common use. It directs the state to sustainably utilize, manage, and maintain our fisheries and other renewable resources. And it directs the legislature, and most importantly, to equally prioritize and balance the conservation of our natural resources with the state's interests in the utilization and development of them. And that's a really key point here, is finding a balance between those two pieces. These constitutional directives really serve as the foundation for the standard of care when managing our salmon resources. That includes the role of the Board of Fish and the Department of Fish and Game and the role they play in fisheries allocation decisions and managing sustainable harvest. But it also should serve as a guide making decisions about how we protect fish habitat, and certainly a guide for this body, this legislative body. And that includes ensuring that our laws are set up in a way that ensures a balanced approach. Now, I think we've heard the problem before. Our law is outdated, and it's very, very general. The commissioner issues a permit unless the plans and specifications are insufficient for the proper protection of fish and game. But there's nothing in regulation, and there's no other statutory directive that really tells us what that means. And so it's a very general approach to a very important law. So functionally, what that does is it provides a current law that does not provide certainty or accountability in the system to ensure that from administration to administration, the law is applied consistently. And as we know, Alaskans are completely excluded from the permitting process at the current time. So a few weeks ago, we heard the Department of Fish and Game testify, and they identified some challenges that they've identified working within this system. And those included a lack of enforcement authority, the need to implement workarounds to assert jurisdiction and apply this law, and a lack of standards overall. And I'm not here to criticize anything Fish and Game does with respect to habitat, but rather just to highlight the problem. And the bottom line is that the current law is a far cry from a rigorous permitting process. The status quo is simply not an option anymore, and we just can't jeopardize our healthy fisheries and keep on going down the way we've been going. So I think we've got a solution on the table here, and I'd like to turn to HB 199. I think this is a step and a very important step in the right direction. Obviously, this is a very difficult task. You know, there's been a lot of potential attempts to change this law and or create some regulations in the 80s and the 90s, and those attempts were all defeated for a very similar purpose that we're hearing today. However, I don't think we can sit here and continue to allow those attempts to go unanswered. And so HB 199, when I read it, I think the current version of the bill builds a very solid scaffolding that we need to make sound and transparent decisions, including public notice, which is, I think, is a big improvement on all permits and the opportunity to for public participation in decisions that could damage Alaska's fisheries. Public participation is really the cornerstone of a good permitting system, especially when it relates to decisions that could damage fisheries. I think HB 199 also fairly balances administrative efficiency through the minor permit process with the need for more scrutiny and review of major projects. And finally, I think HB 199 adds some really great new tools to help enforce permits and judicial review to ensure accountability in the system. And those are all really great improvements. This is a vast improvement over the current law. I would also encourage this committee to entertain adding some enforceable habitat protection standards into the law so that it's moves from a pretty procedural law to having a little bit more substance and some really strong science-based standards in there. But again, I think this is a very great step in the right direction and much, much needed. So in closing, I'd like to address just one final point. I've often heard the rhetoric and of basically the question, show us the problem. Why do we need to fix this system? Why isn't the status quo good enough at this point? And it's really funny because I was going back through some old documents, and in 1996, Fish and Game published an article that was titled, Can Alaska Balance Growth with Habitat Protection? A Biologist's Perspective. So this conversation has been going on for a really long time. And the authors tackled that very question using the Pacific Northwest as an example. And I'm just going to read this quote really quickly from there. In the Pacific Northwest, declining salmon populations have coincided with resource uses incompatible with sustainable management of the whole ecosystem. Declines in salmon production due to habitat loss are masked and hard to detect relative to the time frame of institutional decision making. The failure of institutions to adequately protect the resources over the rights of the entrepreneur is predictable because it is usually politically easier to favor economic growth over conservation. And by the time the affected natural resource has collapsed, the original policymakers are usually gone, leaving a fresh group of policymakers to respond to the public outcry and bring back the lost resource. End of quote. And by the time, as demonstrated by the billions that are being invested in the Pacific Northwest with absolutely no measurable gains whatsoever to improve the condition of those salmon runs, I think it's simply too late at that point. So, you know, I think we've got a great opportunity here in the state to get it right the first time. We are seeing declines in salmon productivity, especially in hard-hit areas like the Matsu Valley. Part of that is due to habitat loss. Fish and Game testified to that not too long ago, that they're recognizing that there's a habitat that is no longer accessible and that is causing some of the decline for those fisheries. And so I think we really have an opportunity to get this right the first time around. And in doing so, I would just really encourage this committee to continue to work on this and continue this great discussion in the state. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That quote was excellent, and I am not familiar with the article that you were quoting from. If you would please send that along.
Happy to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time in testimony, thank testifying. I see we do now have Mr. McKinnon. Mr. McKinnon, if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is John McKinnon. I'm the Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors of Alaska, also called AGC. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. AGC is a construction trade association representing over 640 contractors, specialty contractors, suppliers and manufacturers, all businesses in Alaska, employing tens of thousands on a seasonal and full-time basis in Alaska. Within our membership is much of Alaska's industrial and commercial construction industry. Our motto at AGC is We Build Alaska. The Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA reports that the construction trade in Alaska is the third largest industry, paying the third highest wages, employing over 15,000 workers and contributing $6.6 billion to the economy. And all of this after the last few years experiencing a drop of over 20% to our construction economy. On behalf of AGC, I offer the following comments on HB 199, version M. And I want to thank you for many of the significant changes made in version M from the original. While it is much more palatable, I still question the need. Before I took the job at AGC 11 years ago, I had the honor of being a Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for 5 years. At DOT, I had a responsibility for the highway program, which also included all of DOT's administration, planning, design, and permitting. Permitting then was and still is a significant cost driver of projects. Anecdotally, in 1970, almost 90 cents of every project dollar went as a payment to a contractor. Today, it is less than 70%. That 20-cent difference is in process and permits. Now, those process and permits aren't all bad, but some of the process provides little value. I've looked through the documents on the bill file and the submissions from FERC, DOT, DNR, DEC, and the amount of process and procedure they detail under current law is extraordinary. They all contribute, all of that process contributes to the well-managed resources and habitat we presently enjoy. While the Anadromous Fish Act may not have been changed since statehood, there are dozens of other federal and state laws that have added to the protections in the Anadromous Fish Act. Another layer of review will provide no added value to the resource and instead could cause additional delay and cost to almost all projects, public and private. It's no longer a problem getting the money to do something, it's a problem getting permission. While some consider the impetus for this bill is the letter in January 2017 from the Board of Fisheries, and in it they asked two things, improve public comment and notification and enforceable standards. These could all be done through regulation. They don't need to be done through statute. AGC recognized the importance of fish as a subsistence, sport, and commercial resource for Alaska. However, it's not clear how HB 199 will improve on this critical resource. There doesn't appear to be any scientific analysis behind this legislation. There isn't a real problem in Alaska with development causing loss of habitat that impacts salmon returns. True, if you were to take the Kenai River and put it in some remotely accessible region in Alaska, the runs there would probably be much better, but we can't unring that bell. I can't think of instances where recent decreases in anadromous fish populations are a result of local activities other than overfishing. And overfishing is a management and political problem, not a statutory problem. However, there are many potential contributing factors to poor returns, such as bycatch, offshore harvest, predation, or changes in ocean conditions. I'm concerned that HB 199 would add another layer to the process and endanger Alaskan jobs and threaten any expansion to our state's limited transportation infrastructure, pipelines, and hydroelectric projects. It could also restrict opportunities for Alaska communities to grow and prosper. In closing, in the development of our resources, we don't have to choose between resources, but how to manage among all resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. McKinnon, for your testimony. Appreciate it today. And I'm just wondering, I've heard a few people say that we're doing everything right, so this isn't needed, but I guess sort of playing devil's advocate with that statement, if everything is being done right, then there shouldn't be any fear of this additional public process built into this. And I guess if everything's being done right, then, you know, shouldn't expect any opposition during those opportunities for public comment. So I'm just wondering what your response to that is.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, you said it right there. It's an additional layer. Everything is being done right with the layers we have. Why do we need an additional layer?
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Marlena Hall. If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Absolutely. Good afternoon. My name is Marlena Hall. I am the Executive Director for the Resource Development Council for Alaska. The Resource Development Council, commonly referred to as RDC, is a trade association comprised of members from the oil and gas, mining, forest products, fisheries and tourism industries, as well as Alaska's 12 land-owning Alaska Native corporations. My membership also includes labor, municipalities, and boroughs, the support industry sector, and individuals from all around the state. Just really briefly, for those of you who don't know me, I had expected some other representatives to be here today. I wanted to mention that I'm originally from Nome. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I live and work here, and I love it here. I do want to address the broader concerns of this committee substitute on behalf of my diverse membership. Other invited testimony from specific industries has offered more technical comments, but I hope to add a broader overview of our concerns. With regard to CSHB 199, increasing uncertainty and adding additional unnecessary regulatory burdens to community and resource development projects across Alaska with little to no added benefit to salmon habitat is just not sound policy. This bill would likely delay or even halt these projects and increase costs for our communities and the private sector and would send Alaska further down the regulatory certainty scale. My member companies who have already testified today have given specific examples of the anticipated detrimental effects of this proposed legislation, such as new delays, new unnecessary permits and requirements for permits, new requirements for permitting wetlands, new opportunities for litigation and permit challenges, and more. But I ask a vital question. Why is this bill necessary? Would the sponsors of the bill be able to give an example of how the existing permit process has failed? Many who have testified today spoke to the lack of kings and the size of fish that are out there in specific and have yet to give an example of how these drastic changes to Title 16 will help, or equally importantly, how has Title 16 failed? The idea that our fish habitat is not protected is very misleading. Alaska has some of the best managed fisheries in the world, and each one of us has a stake in maintaining that reputation. If the law is old and isn't working, that is one thing. However, this proposed law is a far cry from a productive, balanced process that will allow Alaskans to live our way of life and coincide with the environment, including fish. The cost added to projects around the state won't just impact businesses, but also communities and everyday Alaskans. If we are already protecting our habitat in a way that is working, why do we have to go so far to negatively impact the way of life across the state? Clearly, both supporters and non-supporters of this bill want to live here and want to protect our salmon and other species for generations to come. All Alaskans, including the first people who have lived here for tens of thousands of years, have a stake in protecting fish habitat. We are all here today because we love this place, we love our way of life. It is clear and proven that community and resource development can coexist with the environment in our great state. Alaska has permitted large projects, such as the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System and six major producing mines, as well as expanding vital transportation infrastructure without harming our fisheries. Our existing permitting system protecting fish has worked well. When updates to Title 16 are being done, we hope that they would focus on the effort to address the specific areas that need to be updated, public comment, and consequences for failing to comply with a permit. This may have been the intention of the sponsor, but unfortunately, we believe this bill goes way beyond that and will damage our communities, our jobs, and our economy, as well as our way of life. In conclusion, this bill will negatively impact community and resource development, including building new infrastructure and improving the limited amount of infrastructure we do have across the state, as well as much-needed new infrastructure. We look to existing projects that have been developed with Title 16 permits, which demonstrate we can and do protect fish habitat and learn from those projects. From fish processing facilities at the mouth of a river in southwest Alaska, to the airport in Ketchikan, to the activities at Prudhoe, and to the interior Alaskan roads that we use every day, fish habitat is protected and coexists with development. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hall. I appreciate your testimony. And I guess I go back to the question I had for Mr. McKinnon. It just seems somewhat inconsistent, the statements that are being made. In one breath are saying everything's working just fine and we do a good job and there's nothing to be concerned about. but then simultaneously saying this is going to cause all this unnecessary delay, that it's going to add cost to projects. But those two things are mutually exclusive, because if everything's being done right, then having this additional layer of public participation shouldn't result in any challenges to whatever permit is being applied for. So the only circumstance where it could be a delay would be if there were issues that the public weighed in on and had questions about. So those things just can't work together, and that's what I keep hearing from the industry folks. And so I guess I just need you guys to sort of pick a position. Either things are working right now, and that's why there's no need for additional scrutiny or changes to Title 16, or, you know, there are issues, and that's why it would be good to have additional public process. But the two are just, they're mutually exclusive events, I guess, if you will. And so I'm just, it doesn't really mesh.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, thank you for that question, statement. I think to answer your question in the beginning there, you asked about whether or not, this is necessary, and if it's not necessary, then I think you're presuming that the public and the stakeholders across, not only in Alaska, but across the nation, wouldn't question or appeal a permit if it was permitted under this legislation. I think that's probably a false assumption to assume that there wouldn't be numerous appeals. In Josh Kindred's testimony from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association this morning, he spoke to the number of opportunities to appeal. So not only does this have increased the opportunities to appeal, but it increases them exponentially. And so I think it's important to recognize that there are public opportunities in nearly every project. I can't think of one. I would say all, but I don't want to put that on the record. I can't think of a project where there isn't public participation in the permitting system. Title 16 in particular, it may not have a public notice, and we're not disagreeing with the fact that should be something that would be considered. That was the request of the Board of Fish. However, this legislation, while well-intended, it goes way beyond those simple requests. Did I answer your question?
Well, sure. And I guess when I look at the four things that he mentioned, you know, one of them was when the commissioner distinguishes between the major and minor permit, and the testimony was that it's expected 80% would be considered minor permits. So, you know, that one isn't as concerning to me. And then the draft assessment, and then during the bond assessment, of course, that process at first might not be well understood, but I imagine there'd be some rhythm or tradition that's established through that bonding for certain projects. That seems to be what's happened. And then with the final permit, but all of those have timelines associated with them, and none of them are very lengthy. And it does come at the suggestion of the Board of Fish that we increase opportunities for public process. So I guess just trying to put all those things together. And you know, the resource industry has been successful here in Alaska in getting legislation passed that actually makes a litigant pay for any damages. So there's a real disincentive for bringing anything forward if someone thinks it's going to be frivolous or something. I mean, people are really not going to challenge things unless it's well-founded, because that could leave them on the hook for the financial cost of that. So, I mean, the industry has so many protections. I think, you know, it's just time that the Alaska public have a little more opportunity to weigh in. And as you stated, you know, this is our Alaska way of life. And, you know, having salmon, and I can think of examples just even in Anchorage with the kind of development that's happened around Chester Creek has been very bad for salmon habitat. And, in fact, that disruption has allowed invasive species to come in and take over in the riparian zone adjacent to the stream. And that's been detrimental because that food replaces what should otherwise be there, and it's not the same quality. So so even just, you know, that simple example in urban Anchorage, I think, you know, there are examples around where we want to be careful, and we don't want to become the Pacific Northwest where our salmon runs are endangered. So I think right now is really sort of critical moment for us to evaluate this and, you know, hope we can get it right. But just, you know, I would say what started out in the original proposal would be more characterized accurately as drastic changes, but this has been scaled back so significantly, seems like a really reasonable improvement, in my opinion.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We will go to Brian Kraft in Anchorage. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Hello, my name is Brian Kraft, Anchorage, Alaska.
And begin your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Stutz, for introducing this bill in 2017 to update Title 16. As I mentioned, my name is Brian Kraft. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm the owner of Alaska Sportsman's Lodge on the Kuzak River near Lake Gilliamna, as well as Bristol Bay Lodge, located on Lake Alignagek, west of Dillingham. I'm also the president of Katmai Service Providers Organization, which is a trade organization representing 50 businesses that do business inside Katmai National Park and Preserve. I'm speaking on behalf of myself today, and the views I'm speaking here represent only my views, not the Katmai Service Providers. I've been in business since 1992. This will be my 27th year of operation. I'm going to give you a broader look at this bill and the issue at hand. I'm not going to get into subsections of the bill. You guys are the experts in doing that. This is more of a comment as to what our industry would like to see. Quick history is I began the education and battle on Pebble in 2004 when I created and personally funded the Bristol Bay Alliance. This was an educational tool to learn about resource development in areas where sensitive habitat for salmon would be at risk. I've been intimately involved in the fight, which seems crazy even as I say the word fight, that we have to fight so hard to protect our fisheries in Alaska seems just ludicrous. But I've been involved in it since 2004. I've watched as the state of Alaska has sat idly by year after year as fisheries are impacted by many factors that are causing declines and as massive mega projects that would destroy huge amounts of currently intact and productive fish habitat are proposed and permittable under the current state law. It is no wonder why the people of Alaska are seeking help from the federal government. I would hope that the legislative body could create a law that adequately protects fish habitat while at the same time allowing industrial activities that have proven to be responsible, such as oil and gas development on the North Slope, to continue. It seems so obvious as to what should be done. Protect the fish habitat. If a proposed project has in its operational plans that is going to consume or destroy habitat that supports fish, then that project should not be allowed, period. I'm not an expert in writing laws. That's what you guys are in Juneau for. But I am an expert in travel and tourism and fishing industry. I urge the committee to recognize the fact that the sport fishing industry and is business in Alaska. I hear many testimony claiming that business is against this bill or against anything like it. My industry, which generates approximately $1.4 billion annually in the state of Alaska and in turn supports over 15,000 jobs statewide, depends on intact habitat and healthy fisheries. We depend on the state to comply with its mandated responsibility in the state constitution to properly protect fish and game. So what does that mean? To me and others in my industry, it's pretty clear. Do not permit activity that will destroy habitat that supports fish. To others, it is not so clear. It might mean that you can destroy or divert or otherwise obstruct a river, such as the Tuit-Nicol or Donlin Creek plans, with the plan to restore them after the extraction process is completed. Herein lies the problem. Outdated law is vague and subject to interpretation and political will. I can certainly understand that our legislative body at the forefront of statehood would make a law that simply said the proper protection of fish and game. Salmon was such an integral part in the fabric of Alaska and still is today. Our fisheries are what defines Alaska from the rest of the West Coast and it differentiates us from the Pacific Northwest, where combination of many factors, agriculture, overfishing, infrastructure, logging, dams, mining, and lack of willingness to enact laws to protect their habitats have all led to an epic crash, an epic failure of their fisheries. Are we next in Alaska? This bill actually adds certainty and clarity to the permitting process and takes out the political wills of a current administration. I believe that the bill was introduced as a result of requests from the Board of Fisheries, which I would argue are the experts with regards to fisheries and habitat. A quick particular practical example is that a permit was just issued last month for a bridge to be built across upper or lower Tulare Creek in the upper reaches of it. This is a small creek in southwest Alaska that is home to massive amounts of spawning sockeye and world-renowned rainbow trout fishing. Yet this bridge that crosses the river was permitted through the Habitat Division with no public notice, no notification to anybody in the industry until after it was issued. You guys have worked on this legislation for 2 years now. It's not perfect. There's arguments on both sides, but it's time to move it out of your committee and have the process continue. That's my testimony. I appreciate your time and effort.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying. Next, we have Dr. Schindler. Dr. Schindler, if you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please, and begin your testimony.
Hello, I'm Daniel Schindler from the University of Washington.
And you may begin your testimony, please.
Thank you for this opportunity to comment today. My name is Daniel Schindler. I'm a professor of fisheries and aquatic sciences at the University of Washington. I have worked extensively on salmon fisheries in western Alaska for over 20 years, and our research program here at UW has performed research on Alaska salmon and their habitat since the late 1940s, even before Alaska was a state. My comments today derive from this collective experience, which sheds light on what is unique about Alaskan fisheries and fish habitat compared to the situation we have here in the lower 48 states. It is gratifying to see that Alaska is finally having a serious conversation about the adequacy of its current laws to protect habitat for fish and wildlife throughout the state. There are a few places left in the world where the connections between people and the land and water are as real as they are in Alaska. Commercial, subsistence, and sport fisheries have been sustained for decades to millennia, and there is no reason to believe that these activities and the economies and cultures they support will not continue into the future, but only if we provide adequate habitat protection and maintain responsible management. The primary reason that Alaska's rivers and lakes are so productive is because the habitat is largely undeveloped, vast, and diverse. Current regulations are intended to protect the most important habitat for fish and wildlife, but what we have learned after decades of study in western Alaska is that it is extremely difficult to identify what is critical habitat and what isn't. Some tributaries may remain unproductive for decades while other tributaries produce most of the fish, and then suddenly the importance of these tributaries can switch. Tributaries can flip back and forth between being important and sitting somewhat dormant, and then back again. So what makes Alaska's rivers so productive and so reliable is that the full complement of habitat remains present. The diversity of habitat stabilizes the overall productivity and reliability of these systems. Eroding this diversity of habitat that could happen with inadequate protection runs the risk of making fisheries much less productive and reliable in the future. I could go on at length about the ecological and environmental reasons for strengthening protection for fish and wildlife habitat in Alaska. However, I am sure that many of the voices you have heard from who have serious reservations about this bill have made their arguments in economic terms. Thus, I think it is important to reflect on what the economic value of intact habitat might be. Using Bristol-based sockeye salmon as an example, the economic value of this fishery has been estimated at over $1.5 billion per year. a large fraction of this revenue remains in-state. What is not widely appreciated is that the total amount of expenditures supporting research and management is less than a couple million dollars per year. So hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue are generated for every dollar spent on research and management. This is a remarkable return on investment by any standard, and it's only possible because of the quality of the habitat that produces fish. Sustainable management of fisheries in Alaska by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is the envy of the world in many regards. But productive and intact habitat is what makes this sustainable management even possible. So for comparison, let's take a look at the Columbia River here in the Pacific Northwest. Here, more than $500 million are spent every year on research, management, restoration, mitigation, compensation, etc. These funds are spent to make up for lost or degraded fish habitat, particularly for salmon. The value of fisheries in the Columbia are generously estimated at a fraction of this investment. So for every dollar spent on research and management and restoration, etc., less than a single dollar of economic revenue is generated. That giant sucking sound you may hear from the Pacific Northwest is from all of the dollars being spent by citizens and by taxpayers to try and prop up the fisheries and the habitat that we have turned our backs on here. So how did we end up here in this predicament in the Pacific Northwest? We made some assumptions about how we could develop rivers for hydropower, agriculture, urbanization, mining, forestry, etc., that have turned out to be massive mistakes from which we are not likely to recover from anytime soon. In particular, we assumed that first, fish habitat needs minimal protection. We also assumed that large-scale restoration is possible in places where habitat is degraded. We also assume that hatcheries can make up for destroyed habitat. And finally, we didn't sufficiently protect habitat because we assumed that we knew what we were doing. Of course, we couldn't have been more wrong on all accounts. There are many scientific, environmental, social, and economic reasons to improve protection for fish and wildlife habitat in Alaska. This is a remarkably wise investment in all terms that you might consider. It does not come at an economic cost, as so many tend to argue. Restoring and mitigating for lost and degraded habitat is unfathomably expensive and essentially ineffective. Alaska is in the driver's seat here to make decisions that the rest of the U.S. made dreadfully wrong. You have the opportunity to do it right. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Doctor. We appreciate it. Are there any questions for that? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony. Next, we will go to Kim Rittmeyer out of Anchorage. Kim, are you available?
I am. Good afternoon.
If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record before you begin, please.
Thank you, Chair Suits. My name is Kim Rittmeyer. I'm the Executive Director for the ANCSA Regional Association. I want to say thank you for the opportunity to testify today at the committee substitute for House Bill 199. The ANCSA Regional Association represents the President and CEO of the 12 land-based Alaska Native Regional Corporations. Our mission is to promote and foster the continued growth and economic strength of the Alaska Native Regional Corporations on behalf of our more than 127,000 Alaska Native shareholders. For those that I've not had an opportunity to meet, I'm a lifelong Alaskan. My family is originally from Kodiak. All my family still resides here in Alaska in our magnificent state. So I know you've heard from many Alaskans and businesses providing detailed technical comments, so I wanted to keep my remarks short for you today and share our broader concern. First, I want to extend my sincere appreciation to Chair Stutz and specifically Matt Gruening for responding to concerns and making a sincere effort to revise 199 into something more acceptable to industry and Alaskans. There are positive steps taken with the new version. However, we still have significant concerns, some of those including the designation of intermittent waters as autonomous fish habitat, the omission of a definition of wetlands in designating autonomous fish habitat, the lack of clarity in the use of mitigation for large permit structures that impact those fish habitat, and the multiple opportunities to litigate a single permit. Please note that while we do not object to the concept of public notification in the fish habitat permit process, it appears that the proposed structure of comment, decisions, and reconsiderations could result in significant project delays. A public notification process should allow significant time to address stakeholder concerns made in good faith while still providing the project proponent a transparent and predictable pathway to a permit. This bill would negatively impact our rural communities and the infrastructure projects that are viable to maintain our way of life. When updates to Title 16 are going to be done, it should be the focus of that effort to address the specific areas that need to be updated. That's the public comment and the consequences for failing to comply with a permit. This may have been the intention of the sponsor, but unfortunately, this bill goes beyond that and will damage Alaska's communities, economies, jobs, and way of life. Alaska Native people who have lived here for tens of thousands of years know there is nothing more important than the cultural and economic significance of salmon and our salmon habitat. Alaska has sustainably managed its fisheries since statehood. Is there room for improvement? Of course. But the unintended consequences of this bill will have a negative impact on our communities for decades to come. We welcome the opportunity to be part of a continued conversation on how we can achieve targeted improvements and what will be beneficial to all of Alaska. The ANCSA Regional Association opposes moving HB 199 from committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony. And that concludes the list of invited testimony for today. So seeing no further business to come before this committee, our next hearing will be Thursday, April 12th at 10 a.m. The committee is scheduled for bills previously heard or scheduled. Our hope is to have a presentation on pike predation of salmon smolt presented at that hearing, but we are still waiting to hear from Fish and Game. If not, we will move it till next week. So with that, I will adjourn the Special Committee on Fisheries at 1:52.